from GPB News. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. On today's show, beating back bullying.
You guys should stop. You're making everyone around you miserable.
Aw, the twins are sticking up for each other. How cute.
Yeah, because that's what friends do.
LGBT students in Atlanta have a new option. We'll go inside the first school in Georgia to expressly embrace all sexual orientations and gender identities. We'll also add two songs to our Georgia playlist, including one that's all about letting go. And terms of affection like honey and sweetheart can be nice when they're said by, say, your dad or your spouse, but they can also be sexist when they're not, and they're not welcome in the courtroom anymore. That's one of the things we'll talk about with our break room panel. First, let's revisit a conversation we had yesterday. We talked about why learning your opinion is wrong could actually make you believe it more. Audrey Haynes is a professor of political science at the University of Georgia.
One of the most difficult things to change is a stereotype. Even if you give people information, even if they have some experiences that counter that stereotype, it tends to stick with them.
Here are your first thoughts. Catherine Cummings tweets, "Fear and privilege, especially white privilege, keep many people from changing their minds. If their fears change, their ideas may too." John Hayes adds, "In this modern age, our egos are constantly being stroked. Without humility, admitting you are wrong, even to yourself, is impossible." And Leslie Small tweets this, "Lived experiences have changed the way I think about a lot of stuff." We love getting your reactions to these stories. You can call us at 404-500-9457. Leave a message for us. We're also on Twitter at OST Talk or post to Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. The first school in the South that caters to LGBT youth opened its doors in Atlanta last week. It's called Pride School Atlanta, and the school hopes to provide a place where teens can find acceptance and safety. Classes have already started, and joining me now from Pride School Atlanta is its founder and director, Christian Zilovitz. Good morning, Christian.
Good morning, Celeste.
And also with us is 14-year-old Josh Farabee, who's part of the school's inaugural class. Hi there, Josh.
Hi.
So tell me about the start of the year, because, you know, some kids don't always love going back to school, but this is not just a new school year, but a new school for you. What's it like?
Well, I can say that it was the first year I've been excited to go back to school.
Why is that?
I'd say because it's... I was just excited for a new beginning and being someplace that celebrates who I am.
What do you hope the school will be for you? In what ways do you hope it will be different from the schools you've been in before?
I hope that it will be a place that I don't have to be scared to go to, a place that I can learn without hesitation or learn without restrictions.
And your 14th birthday fell on the same day as the first day of school, right?
Yes.
So happy birthday as well.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Christian, when Josh talks about being safe, that's not an exaggeration, because LGBT students often don't find safety in regular schools. Why does Atlanta and the South need the Pride School?
Well, I think everywhere around the country needs a school like Pride School Atlanta, where it needs actually lots of schools like Pride School Atlanta, where everyone gets to be themselves, especially their best selves, and not have to fight for a seat at the educational table. And because there are no specific protections for gender identity and sexual orientation in many of our schools around Georgia still, unlike the city of Atlanta and city of Decatur, there's definitely a need to support students openly. And also, even in those towns where there are legal protections, it doesn't mean that their daily life is not horrible also, because the laws don't necessarily notice what's going on in the locker room, in the hallway, in the bathrooms, and when the teachers aren't looking, and when there's a substitute. And, you know, there's still a lot of fighting for bathroom rights for trans youth and for, you know, pronouns and name changes and all that in the state of Georgia, especially.
LGBT students and transgender kids are at much higher risk for violence, being threatened or injured on school property. They're at a much higher risk for depression and suicide attempts. How do you, Christian, how do you handle emotional health at the school? Or do you just feel that by bringing together a group of kids that are very similar, you won't have the same issues?
Well, you know, students who have dealt with chronic bullying for years, especially, and chronic shaming for who they are, come with a host of issues, of course. And many of them are doing their own self-care outside of school. But we also were very clear upon bringing in volunteers and staff who have experience as therapists, as social workers, as mentors within the LGBT community. And so we are very clear that we are also putting plans in place for when kids are having a hard time, because being in a place where you can be yourself is actually probably more jarring than having to go to school every day wondering what's going to happen, because now you can actually take off the mask, and that's a really unusual place to be. So we take actions probably every 10 minutes to check in with our students just by keeping an eye on them to see how they're doing. I mean, this is the second week of a new school, so anytime you're in a new school, when you can actually pay attention to what's going on, is a really great thing. And I'm sure, you know, we'll all settle in, but we're also making sure that we have therapists available outside of school and PFLAG meetings and other support groups like Atlanta Gender Variations. And
sorry, what's PFLAG?
So much more outside. Oh, PFLAG, for those who don't know, is Parents, Friends, and Family of Lesbians and Gays and Trans Folk. And it's a nationwide support group for anybody who'd like to attend. And there are active PFLAG groups in Atlanta and Johns Creek and down in Henry County and I believe in Clayton County as well. And it's a place where anybody can get support if they happen to be or love an LGBT person.
I'm speaking about the first school in the South that's dedicated to serving LGBT youth. It's Pride School Atlanta. Christian Zilovitz is the founder and director, and we also have with us Josh Farabee, 14 years old and part of the inaugural class there. So, Josh, you know, this is what we're talking about you. We're talking about how difficult it can be to be a teenager and be LGBT. Did you have to endure bullying or any kind of attacks, verbal or otherwise, in your former schools?
Yes, I did.
What Christian was just talking about was the change, the dramatic change when you go from something like that, having to go through bullying, on a regular basis, Josh?
Somewhat.
Okay. Regular. So what is that like to suddenly have that disappear? Is that jarring as well?
It's weird. It's unfamiliar, but it's good. I'd much rather I be somewhat uncomfortable for a little while than, you know, have to deal with that.
Did you have a discussion with your parents about going to the school? Was it a big decision?
Yeah, we had a discussion about it.
Go ahead.
No.
Christian, how does the school's relationship with parents affect the educational mission there?
Well, the parents are one of the biggest partners, along with the student, of course. And we certainly have had students reach out who have an interest in coming to our school but aren't sure if their parents would support them in coming to an LGBT-affirming school. The other thing to remember is that we don't only serve LGBT youth, but that is one of our primary focuses, to make sure that anybody who's had a target on their back knows that they are welcome, or they just want a great progressive education. And so this is a school where really anybody gets to be themselves. And so some of our parents happen to be LGBT identified themselves, or their kid maybe doesn't fit in a typical public school environment. Some students are homeschooled. The parents are really a primary partner but actually the student is the number one driving force in their education here, which is great. because we have a free school model. So where the parents are more of in a support role for the student, and that's what we are here too, is to facilitate and to teach and support. So, but you know, we have a very transparent relationship with the adults who are important to our students. And we are here to make sure that they are, number one, healthy, and number two, happy, and number three, getting an education, because without any of that safety, you really can't do much with your education, I don't think.
Josh, what do you want to do after you graduate?
I would like to be a tattoo artist, or I'd like to do art in general.
So you want to do art and possibly draw that art onto people's skin?
Yes.
I guess.
And he's really awesome. He's really awesome.
A really good artist there. Josh, are there enough art classes available at Pride School Atlanta for you?
I think so. So far, we haven't had many set classes, but I am definitely free to do art whenever and to research it and look into all aspects of it if I want to.
You know,
and actually, we're just about to, yeah, I was going to say, we're just about to start an anatomy class, as a matter of fact, and that's one of the things that really supports Josh in a lot of the work that he's doing. Like, one of our volunteers, Dana Bevan, is a neuroscientist, and she's actually going to start doing anatomy with several students who are interested. So all of that, and several kids are doing digital art as well as you know, even just art on paper. So as they make a request for a class, we start building it into our curriculum, and we reach out to the community and say, hey, we want some art classes here. Who can help us? And people are reaching out left and right, which is great.
We've got a couple minutes left, Christian, and I wonder, what is the downside to possibly segregating these kids, in your mind, if there is one, from a general school population? Is there a risk?
You know, actually, most of these students have already been segregated from the general population because they got sick of being treated like dirt at school and having to fight for their rights every day. So actually, many of the students we were working with had already left the public school system as well as private schools. They have become, many are were homeschooled by the time they came to us. And that's actually, they've self-segregated because they've been forced out of the system because their needs were not being met and because their rights were not being respected. And so this actually is life-saving. Giving students a place where they can be, learn, and grow and thrive is by far not dangerous at all. And every time they leave our school, just like any other school, they go out into the public, they listen to the radio, they watch TV, they, you know, they listen to the political campaigns, they pay attention to what's going on in North Carolina and even in their own state. I mean, that's where the danger is when you turn on the news and you see that the attorney general in your own state is saying that you don't deserve to have rights in your own schools. And so we're here to bolster them and get them ready for when they walk out the door so that they have the internal strength and self-acceptance instead of just always hearing these negative messages. And so we're saving lives, and they're saving their own lives by walking in the door every day.
That is Christian Zilovitz. He's the founder of Pride School Atlanta. It caters to LGBT youth. And we also heard from 14-year-old Josh Farabee. Josh and Christian, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day at school. Just ahead, the Break Room Gang talks about cyberbullying, a gold medalist, horrible bosses, and getting rid of student loan debt forever. First, though, let's add a little music to our Essential Georgia playlist. This is On Second Thought. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. Let's add a couple more songs to the Georgia playlist. That's our collection of the best songs from and about Georgia. The rules are really simple. All the tunes have to be written or performed by a Georgian, and the musicians cannot pick one of their own songs. So today's selections come from Kristen Nyland, the Atlanta producer and DJ, also known as Speaker Fox. She's the host of a new radio program called Cruisin' in the ATL. It's part of the relaunch of the Red Bull Music Academy Radio. The traveling music series has been in Atlanta this week, and it ends this Saturday. Here are her two picks for the Georgia playlist.
There's a fine line The first song that I chose for the Georgia playlist is Liberation by Outkast. There's a fine line between love and hate, you see. Can't wait too late, but baby, I'm on it. There's a fine line between love and hate, you see. Can't wait too late, but baby, I'm on it. Liberation by Outkast is one of the most beautiful tracks that they've ever produced. It's almost like church to me. The message in Liberation is about like liberating your mind and, you know, shaking off the negative. Can't worry about what another think. Now that's liberation, and baby, I want it. I remember having this tape, the Equemini tape in middle school, and listening to this tape driving around in my boyfriend's car. There's a feeling of comfort that I get when I play the album from beginning to end, and it's very rare these days for an artist to have an album like that that you can just put on and, you know, start from beginning to end. But this album's kind of like soul food. It's just like comfort food, but for my soul. To have a choice to be who you want to be is left up to me, and my mama never told me. You know, I've loved Outkast since I was a kid. I grew up on Outkast, so they're very much part of my upbringing and very much influenced a lot of my taste in music. I'm so tired, been so long struggling, hopelessly settling for the day. I was actually honored enough to open a set for Goody Mob a few years ago at One Music Fest, and to be able to watch the song live, let's just say there's not a lot of dry eyes in the audience. It was like a spiritual experience. So I think the people that love the song get it, you know. There's a part where they say, shake that load off, and they repeat it 16 times. And just kind of hammering in the message of shake that load off, as in, like, you know, just really let go of what's burdening you and realize, like, what you have. It's a message of gratitude to me. So the second song that I chose for the Georgia playlist is a track by Kilo Ali called Baby Baby. It's my all-time favorite Kilo Ali track. When I'm alone in the room, I see a stare at the wall. Brother can't find no love, and I'm gonna find your girl some way, somehow. I need you right now. Search the world, I couldn't find that feeling. Your love is a what in the mood, because I like the way you touch me. And I like the way you Kilo Ali Baby Baby came out in 1997, and I was really young when it came out. So I remember going to clubs and hearing older DJs play it, and I just really liked the vibe that it gave as soon as it came on. Just his style was unparalleled. It had never come out. Either people were rapping or they were singing. They didn't do both. So between Kilo Ali and Koopsta from 3-6, this kind of sound was born. And it's something that's huge now, but if it hadn't been for them, that sound would have never come around. She said, I think I'm Stevie Wonder. Well, I like to thank your mama. When I'm around, you feel like this. A kiss is just a kiss. Growing up in Atlanta, you know, I've lived here my whole life. I remember hearing this song and the sounds of kind of that booty bass, TLC, that whole era, and it just sounding like magic to my ears. Let me finish. I get that. Keep the camera rolling. I'm kind of fast. Get all the girls. And I shot the world.
If I could describe the sound of Georgia, it would probably be the Outkast album Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music. It would probably also be Aquemini and ATLians. The song Rosa Parks really reminds me of the South. Andre 3000 and Big Boy's voice, they're storytellers. They really created a sound for the South. They paved the way for Atlanta to become the home of hip hop and kind of the benchmark for hip hop right now in the music industry in the United States.
That was Atlanta DJ and producer Speaker Fox with her picks for our ever-growing Georgia playlist. And did you hear me say ever-growing? You can help grow the Georgia playlist by giving us your picks to add to the list. Call us at 404-500-9457, tweet us at OST Talk, or post your suggestions on Facebook. You can find the entire Georgia playlist series along with all the great music segments we've done at gpbnews.org. You know what? It's been a long week. We have talked about racial and economic divides in our nation, gamma knife brain surgery, and why we never change our minds, or almost never. Now it's time to sit back, relax, let's celebrate Friday, and head into the break room.
Remember when people used to say boss when they were describing something that was really cool? But now boss is just slang for a jerk in charge.
It is possible to lead a healthy, active, fulfilling life with student loan debt. Just not for very long.
Plant foods are superior to animal products in every way. Go vegan, everybody. Mm.
Joining us in the break room, Chuck Reese is the editor-in-chief of The Bitter Southerner. Jessica Lee Libos is the community editor for Connect Savannah, and her debut on in the break room. Hi, Jessica.
Hello, it's so great to be here.
Also with us, Tamika DePriest, Senior Director for Communications at Emory, and Jeff Breedlove, Communications Director for DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester. Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Welcome to Friday.
Yay, Friday.
Speaking of the end of the work week, let's talk about work. Some people do not like their jobs, and you can understand if they have a boss like this.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Okay, so it turns out, according to a study from a Danish organization, they discovered that what causes depression at work is not your workload. It's your boss. You're much more likely to be depressed on the job if your boss is unfair. So have we found this to be true? And you don't have to talk about your current job. Jeff's raising his hand.
I have to go on record as saying DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester may be the best boss ever. Hey, Nancy, because I know she's listening. But I'm not going to come on the air and say no. But I will say this. What I found over the years is not so much my boss, but sometimes your coworkers, when they're not working to succeed and they're just there to show up and collect a paycheck and go home, I think that affects morale around the office. And I found, that to be kind of depressing a little bit more than the boss itself is the coworkers. That's been my experience.
Okay. Well, let's hear from Jessica. What about you? And they specifically said an unfair boss, somebody who is not consistent and unjust. Can that ruin a job for you?
Well, look, I mean, I work for great people, but I keep a giant bottle of Rescue Remedy in my desk because you never know what's going to happen during the day. But, yes, I mean, I think being treated unfairly or just working for someone who doesn't like you or, brings in difficult material for you to work with when they know that you're not ready to do that, yeah, that can make you depressed. What I thought was really interesting about this study is that they studied cortisol levels, and which is used to measure stress, and stress doesn't cause depression. It's really caused by working with people and around people who, again, are unfair or might be depressed themselves, which I think brings up a interesting point. So if your boss is depressed, how is that setting somebody up to succeed?
That's interesting.
I've had a pretty good track record. In fact, great. I have had one occasion where
you know, sort of my boss and I wasn't in alignment. And there was some unfair practices also in play. And I loved the job, but I did not like the experience. So much so, it got to the point where actually there were days when I woke up thinking, oh, I don't want to go there. And so it led me to just, you know, resign and move on to my next opportunity. So, yeah, I definitely think it can have an impact. And the University of Michigan's Depression Center says depression ranks as the number one contributor to disability. And it's associated with more than $44 billion per year in lost productivity. And so I thought, there must be a lot of bad bosses out there.
There are.
But I've been lucky.
Well, that's why I'm my own boss now. Yeah. I made that choice.
That doesn't mean you're not still a bad boss.
No, I know that. I try really hard not to
be
that.
Could be a bad boss of yourself. Speaking of depressing, speaking of depression, the Atlanta Braves, still terrible. The club has won the fewest games in all of baseball this season. But of course, look, everything will be better when the team plays in their brand new stadium in Cobb County, right? Traffic is already a subject of concern. In response, the Braves say they will push back the start of their home games from 7 p.m. to 7:30 because that will help relieve traffic congestion. And Jeff, you're already shaking your head. No, it won't work.
Well, let me say, I've been to a lot of Braves games. I live in Grant Park. I'm a longtime attendee at Turner Field.
Yeah.
And I've worked in the area where the stadium's moving and know a lot of the leaders in Cobb County up there. It's a mitigated disaster what's about to happen. And it's not just for Cobb. It's impacting Sandy Springs and Dunwoody. Those communities, those neighborhoods are just figuring that out and are scrambling to figure out what's about to hit those people. The only thing that's going to save the north side of Atlanta is if the Braves keep playing the way they are and no one goes to the games.
Or if maybe they let MARTA expand into Cobb County. What do you think? Jessica, you don't live up here, but can moving the time...
I think it sounds like a brilliant idea. It still doesn't give me enough time to drive on I-16 from Savannah.
No.
So we don't have Major League Baseball here. We have the Savannah Bananas, which is a awesome college summer league. We had a great time. So it's, but you know, it's not
don't
something that's taken
put,
as seriously.
Get your Savannah Banana plugs in here. Check.
Check them out.
The Savannah Bananas just won the championship.
They did.
Jessica.
What I was going to say, they just won the championship.
No, bananas
really
plugs
exciting.
Here when we're complaining about the Braves. Go
and
ahead.
Well, when you talk about a commute, it's a 10-minute commute.
Well, I think it'll have as much impact as HOV lanes have had,
which is nothing.
Nothing. No reduction in traffic or carpool. Pollution, for that matter.
Well, you know, there's a more fundamental problem with baseball, which is that the games, you know, have just gotten longer and longer and longer. It used to be that if you went to a major league ball game, you could pretty much count on the standard 9-inning game getting done in between 2.5 and 3 hours. It's 3 at minimum these days because they've let the pitchers take so long between pitches. And it's like, I think people are getting bored with the sport anyway. And
so moving it a half hour later just means you might be there past midnight.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, I live in DeKalb County, and it's going to take me, if I go to a ball game that starts at 7:30, probably not going to get home till midnight, 12:30, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to do it.
The other bad thing up there, and I think it's horrible what they've done, is this whole parking situation. There is no rapid rail per se. Folks are going to over...
Wait, per se, there is rapid rail,
well,
not say?
Well, there's Cobb Rapid Transit, but there's no MARTA line. It's much worse than it was at Turner Field. And parking itself is a disaster. They can't make agreements. The Cobb Board of Commissioners is being very restrictive on what private property owners can do.
Yeah.
And they've got a real mess on their hands. I think it's horrible for people that do want to go to the games. The games have gotten longer. Instant replay and the challenges added to it, too. And this is just a mess.
Well, all of this sounds very charming to me. I mean, it makes minor league baseball very charming.
Jessica's reaffirming her decision to live in Savannah at this moment.
Plenty of parking at Grayson Stadium.
let's put this out to our listeners. Do you think that pushing back the home game time from 7 o'clock to 7:30? I should mention that they said rush hour in Atlanta generally goes to 7:15. So pushing it to 7:30 is supposed to avoid rush hour. Okay, if
great
you think
on game
that
night, she goes to 8 now.
If you think that will work or not work, we want to hear from you. You can call us at 404-500-9457. You can also tweet us at OST Talk or post on Facebook. My guests in the break room, Chuck Reese, editor-in-chief of The Bitter Southerner, Jessica Lee Libus of Connect Savannah, Tamika DePriest of Emory University, and Jeff Breedlove of the DeKalb County Commissioner's Office. It is Friday. We are hanging out, and we're going to talk about soon a new rule that's supposed to prevent male lawyers from talking down to their female counterparts.
The lady has foolishly attempted to join the conversation with a wild and dangerous opinion of her own. Women, know your limits. In thought, be plain and simple, and let your natural sweetness shine through.
Yeah, right. This is On Second Thought.
How's your new love? Are you happy? Hope you're doing fine. Just to know it means so much to me. What's that, darling? How am I doing? Guess I'm doing all right, except I can't sleep.
This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. We are in the break room this morning. With me, Chuck Reese, editor-in-chief of The Bitter Southerner. Jessica Lee Libus is the community editor for Connect Savannah. Tamika DePriest is the senior director for communications at Emory University. And Jeff Breedlove, communications director. Well, lots of communications people today for DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester. And we want to say thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink. Jessica, you don't get to drink any up here in the studio, but you're down there. So I guess you could go to Savannah Coffee Roasters on your own to get a coffee.
Exactly. It won't take me very long at all.
No yeah. traffic.
There you
no
are
traffic.
With the traffic and parking again.
Sorry to rub it in, y'all.
You're not sorry. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. Well, let's talk about one more source of misery. We already talked about traffic and parking. Let's talk about student loans. Right now, students in the U.S. have racked up an estimated $1.3 trillion in loan debt, and that can hurt our nation in more ways than one.
Student loans only get worse with time and can manifest in many ways. Studio apartments, having roommates well into your 30s, top ramen, and driving a car older than yourself.
Okay, so the president of Bard College recently suggested all student loans should be forgiven. He says that will end up stimulating the economy. Not everyone is thrilled with that idea, though. One listener posted it at my Facebook page, quote, "At least I have the decency to pay my loans off," end quote. So is this a matter of human decency, and is loan forgiveness a reasonable idea? What do we think? Jeff, you're shaking your head already. You are the early early reactor.
Well, I mean, I went to Georgia State, and there was one semester where I was working three jobs plus taking a full load of classes to pay my own way. And I think it sends a horrible, horrible signal to young people in America if we suggest that you make a commitment and you don't have to keep yours. That doesn't work in the real world. It doesn't help you succeed in life. And if we're going to send a message to people that have already made a commitment, that they just don't have to keep it, that's horrible. Now, if we change things through the legislative process, that's one thing. But for folks that made a commitment and signed on the dotted line, they need to keep their word just like everyone who paid the loans did. It's
I
just
will say,
not
though,
right.
I had multiple jobs in college and scholarships and still walked away with student loan debt. Student loan debt is treated differently than any other type of debt in the United States.
If you're going to say, I'll take this money and I will pay it back, you need to do that. And I'll tell you right now, I don't know what you would contribute to a business. I don't know how anybody could trust you anywhere else if that's the posture you take.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, that's like, you know, the thing about it is that we don't get into, we're at the point now where we have a more systemic problem created by all this student debt. And, you know, while I might not go all the way to forgiveness, you know, I wonder about some sort of broader debt reduction plan for everybody who's carrying this student loan debt. Because the thing about it is, I'm 55 years old. My mother died when I was 11 years old, and my dad socked away those Social Security checks from her until it was time for me to go to college. And basically, that money was enough to put me through college. So I never had to go through the student debt thing. I was fortunate like that, but I have many friends. It's just a crippling thing for. And I think it's probably so widespread at this point it's a drag on the economy. So I think it's worth considering not a full-scale forgiveness, but some kind of scaling back.
There are already loan forgiveness programs,
yeah.
just with certain parameters wrapped around them, like for if you're in education and you teach in a certain environment that's, you know, economically disadvantaged. There are some programs for doctors working in similar communities. And so it already exists at a certain level. And I think, you know, part of the student loan formula is access to jobs when you graduate. So I'm not so certain that it's, well, I'm pretty sure it's not all about a trust issue, but it's about an access and opportunity. And so I'm for looking even deeper at loan forgiveness programs. You got 42 million Americans who have student debt.
You can't discharge it in bankruptcy. You can't refinance it. I mean, the student loan debt, if they treated it like another loan, we would not have the problems that we have. But they have the U.S. government has made it so that student loan is very, very difficult to either pay off or get rid of. Here's another thing, a point I might make, and this is personal to me because I still have a student loan that I've been paying now for 20 years.
Wow.
They give you an interest rate when you leave college, and that's it. That you're set
yes.
with that look, for
look,
the
yes.
rest of your
yes.
life.
Look, reasonable people can agree to tweak things and make things happen, but this idea of just forgiving it and saying it's zero... I should also mention, Jeff,
that some people have paid more in interest than the original loan was yes. for when you're talking about
I have
responsibility.
Interest rate.
Sorry, Jeff,
so
go
the
ahead.
Yeah, no, because I have to say I agree with Tamika and Chuck. And, you know, if you're not going to do a forgiveness, we need to look at a broader scope of debt reduction. I remember celebrating my husband's 40th birthday, which coincided with the last student loan payment. At the time, you know, we have two children. We already had a mortgage. We had been carrying that debt for a really long time. It felt really good to pay off, and I feel really fortunate that we've been able to. But it was, again, you can't renegotiate that debt like you can other types
right.
of debt, credit card debts, car debts. You could, you know, even going into bankruptcy. And I'm very grateful, in terms of it allowed him to open his own business and become an entrepreneur. So it's worked out great. But I look at other people, especially people that I work with who are in their 20s and 30s who are shouldering massive amounts of debt. And I think as an economic stimulus, looking at it from an economic perspective, just like any other economic stimulus, when you give corporations a tax break or you
yeah.
give another sector of the population some kind of break, it stimulates people to spend more money on other things. And it can really kickstart what we need in this country is more jobs, more businesses, and more people working.
And I should also say, Jeff, this is you and I are both older. College is considerably more expensive now than
yes.
it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Well,
we got a tweet. We have to move on. But we had a tweet from T-Barf who says, Jeff is spot on. And Carrie Howell says, student loans drove up the cost of tuition. I literally can't die to get out of it. Let's move on to something else that will end here. Talk show hosts Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert moved on from Comedy Central, and the network replaced them with two non-white hosts, Trevor Noah and Larry Wilmore. Now, at this point, Noah is the last man standing.
But I am Larry Wilmore, your next host for the next, 29 minutes and 31 seconds. This boy. Now, let me just say, it's never easy when your television show gets canceled. But I have to tell you, for me, there has been a silver lining, you guys. All the free booze.
The Nightly Show, hosted by Larry Wilmore, aired its final episode last night. Comedy Central says the show is canceled because of low ratings, and that means there is only one non-white late-night show host remaining on TV. Did you ever watch The Nightly Show, Anne? Do you think the show... failed because people aren't ready to support black hosts or another reason?
I've watched the show and though have not been consistent with it. So for me, I think consistency was part of it. I would have liked to have seen the network, apply more time because some have gotten more time to kind of tweak the segments and their show, the way it's formatted, to make a better connection. So...
I don't
think you had the right mix of elements.
I would agree with that because I think Trevor Noah is fantastic. I think he's sexy. I think he's young and funny and quick. And I think Larry Wilmore's humor, a little drier. He's not, you know, he's a little nerdier maybe, but super smart and whip smart. But he also focused a lot on racial injustice in his show, which I think is fantastic. I think that I wish America was ready for that. I think we all need to hear some of that. But I think couched in the humor that he was bringing, I think it was maybe difficult for people to take in a little bit in a consistent way. I also think his press dinner jokes fell a little flat, and yeah. I think that might have contributed.
At the correspondence dinner.
The correspondence dinner, exactly.
Yeah, so, he didn't get the best performance there.
I think he's a very smart guy, and I really hope he's going to find a place somewhere because I think his voice really needs to be heard.
I agree with that, and he's a really talented guy, and his segments on The Daily Show when Stewart was still there were amazing. But I also think you have to look at this a little bit through the lens of just the changing zeitgeist of the country. You know, you think back to how long it took Jon Stewart to build up to the point where everyone sort of thought what he said was critical. You know, you had to listen to it. It's a very different situation when you put anyone in a position in trying to fill shoes like that, because the expectations are so much higher on them than it ever was, than they ever were on the original guy.
We have a tweet here again from T-Barf. It says, the show just wasn't that funny. Plain and simple, he mistook snark for comedy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we always welcome comments from our listeners. You can reach us on Twitter, like T-Barf does, at OST Talk, or go on to Facebook. Let's talk about the Olympic Games. Almost over. Jeff Breedlove is wearing his red shoes and star socks that no one in Radioland can see. The 2016 Olympic Games in Rio wrap up this weekend. The U.S. is way out in front. America has won 40 more medals overall than the second place country, which is Great Britain. One of those gold medals belongs to gymnast Gabby Douglas.
Douglas needs a big score.
And she has height to her release moves on this event.
There's a reason they call her the flying squirrel.
And she nails it.
Does she always rise to the occasion?
She does.
You know what? That's the first time in a while that I have seen a smile out of Gabby Douglas.
So maybe the reason Douglas has been in poor spirits is the onslaught of criticism she's gotten on Twitter. The 20-year-old athlete has been attacked for not holding her hand over her heart during the national anthem, not being enthusiastic enough on TV, and she's been criticized for her hair as well. Where do we think this criticism comes from? And I should say other athletes have not held their hands over their hearts. So I'm wondering, why do we think Gabby Douglas is being targeted specifically? Ideas?
I think it might be holdover from the last Olympics when she was attacked for her hair and all of these things. I mean, it's heartbreaking because she's not only a gifted and incredible athlete, but clearly a lovely young woman. And it pains me to see what's gone on social media against her. I also think that the repetition of the media sort of picking up on these things sort of snowballs it and invites other people to continue the slide. But, you know, it's been a little depressing to watch.
Yeah, I'm completely puzzled by it. And in some ways, I wonder the impact it had on just her performance this time around in the Olympics. I'm sure there were many stressors, but it's tough when you are singled out and also great.
I agree with you on that, but I also think that you know, we clearly still have some double standard problems here. You know, you look at what was going on yesterday after it was revealed that Lochte and the
swimmer,
had, you know, and those three other swimmers
fabricated a story of being robbed at gunpoint.
Exactly. You know, when you heard about that, the reaction was, oh, they're just kids being kids, you know.
He's 32.
Boys will be boys. And it's just, you know, it's crap. And, you know, I think that black athletes, when they reach that level, particularly in sports where we perhaps haven't seen them reach such a high level of achievement, they're held to such enormously high standards.
Yeah.
It's like they have to do everything perfectly, you know, and no
one
can...
Even if they do, they may still come in.
Right.
I mean, I think it's horrible what's happening to her, and I'm thinking about the cover of Time magazine where it talks about, are we turning over social media to a bunch of haters, a hate generation? And I think it's indicative of what's going on out there. I mean, when you compare that to what those young men did, I think what those men did were, what we know about seems horrible and very, very bad. So I think these younger athletes, to attack her like this, I mean, it really bothers me. We should applaud the fact that she's even in the Olympics. She's worked so hard, given so much of her life, and shown so much talent. And for people just to attack over little things, I think, is horrible.
Well, can I say one more thing? Because I just feel like, I mean, it's really important to put out that the attacks on her, they're misogynistic, they're racist, they're unacceptable.
Speaking of misogyny,
speaking of misogyny, let's talk about the American Bar Association. They have a new rule now, and it forbids male lawyers from calling female attorneys honey or darling or anything like that while they are in court. That came after one female lawyer was told during a trial, quote, "Don't raise your voice at me. It's not becoming of a woman," end quote. So, were female attorneys being oversensitive, or is this a step forward?
No, they were not being oversensitive, and yes, it's a step forward.
Okay, fair enough. Tamika?
Ditto.
We're going to get through this fast, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's amazing. Are we still here? Do we actually need to legislate people's language?
And
clearly we do. Because,
yeah, we do.
You know, again, it's a Southern thing. Y'all, hey, darling. You know, all those things can be seen as you know, familiarity, which is not appropriate in a courtroom, no matter what.
But
in a professional environment.
If I were an attorney and I was in court against a woman, and the woman said, "Hey, sugar britches," or "Hey, honey," whatever. You know,
sugar britches.
I'm not gonna. That's a good one, sugar britches. But you know, it's,
you know, you're in the South, Wynn.
At any rate, what I'm saying is that, you know, I would be shocked. You know, it would be like, you know, how dare you address me this way in such an august body.
So, I also think the court would receive, I think there would be some gender difference in terms of the way the court would respond to that. I was just imagining if a woman, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot and sugar britches came out, just the amount of scorn.
Jaws would drop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't think anybody's ever called me sugar britches, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but
it's bad.
It's bad. But I do think, you know, in the South, and I grew up here, some of those terms of endearment happen culturally, but in the courtroom and in professional settings, it's just not appropriate. I don't think it was appropriate in the 1950s, and I don't think it's appropriate today.
Unless, you know, unless I'm being called that by someone quite elderly, I usually take exception. We are out of time in the break room today. I want to say thank you to my guest, Chuck Reese, is editor-in-chief of The Bitter Southerner. Jessica Lee Libos is community editor for Connect Savannah. Jeff Breedlove is the communications director for DeKalb County Commissioner Nancy Jester. And Tamika DePriest is the new senior director for communications at Emory University. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Happy Friday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's throw that question out to our listeners, though. When was the last time you were called honey or darling or, dare I say, sugar britches? And was it offensive or not? Call us at 404-500-9457. We are on Twitter. I'm at Celeste Headley. The show is at OST Talk. For today and the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.
About you to get into precisely what I am about to do. I'm conversating to the folks who have no whatsoever clue. So listen very carefully as I break it down for you. Merrily, 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 high to happy overjoy. Please, with all the beats and rhymes my sisters have employed. Slick as you throwing down the sound, totally a yes. Let me state the position. Ladies first, yes?
Yes. Yeah, they're gonna be-